Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
There's no reason to touch
it. And inform you in the afternoon.
I think your cheeks are a little loose.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And Kimbrel deals 1-2. Breaking ball is grounded weakly to third. Nunez fields, fires, and it is in time for the out. Ball game over. Boston wins. And the Yankees, I think, before they celebrate, I think the Yankees are going to look at it. And I think the Yankees, and they'd be nuts not to look at it. Nunez fires to first, and he's out. The throw hit Pierce's glove. He's out. Ball game over. Boston wins. And Boston wins the American League Division Series 3-1.
So it ends on replay. We're so conditioned to it, we don't even care anymore. But if you want a time machine and went back 10 years and said, this is how the game's going to end, with umpires with headsets on?
Oh, you'd hate it.
Wouldn't you hate it?
I mean, I thought, to me, it was a little like the Patriots-Falcons at the end of the Super Bowl when James White scored. Remember they had to review that play?
So yeah, I was trying to quote, like, when did this just happen to us? And was right. It was the Atlanta Super Bowl.
You remember Edelman running around saying, no, they get a review, they got to check it, they got to check it, and Bill said they already did? Like, that's what it felt a little like to me. Like, here we go. Now we got to stand around and wait.
But we're just used to it by now, aren't we?
Yes. Yes.
It does take away some of the fun. I'm sure it doesn't really matter ultimately to the players on the field, but it goes from, yay!
Wait. Okay, yay!
Yeah.
Well, and I heard them talking about this on the midday show, too. How long did that replay take?
A little too long.
Holy crap, I'm sitting there going, can you show me the replay?
Meaning
the viewer.
For TBS to show us. Yeah.
It took forever.
Yeah, a little slow.
Like, I expect the fat-ass umpires to waddle over to the camera and take a while, but can you show me while they're checking it out so I can make my own decision?
Did you hear Jones yelling about it in real time? They played the clip in the middle.
I caught a little up, and it was fabulous.
Yeah. Can you show me the replay, TBS?
Oh, I was with them, though, on that one.
Everybody was.
Really, at that moment, I was completely in sync with the Dark Knight. I was totally aligned with him.
All right, so we're getting your action to that series, those great two games. And they were two great games for the Red Sox down in New York. They played exceptionally well. And, you know, get a huge monkey off their back. And now are they even freed up a little bit to even be better than they've been? You know, were they weighed down a little bit by their past failures in those situations? And you see it all the time. A team crosses a threshold, and now they're a different team going forward. And you're going to see that from the Red Sox. I wonder about that. Because, you know, they needed that one. They couldn't. I mean, organizationally, if they had lost that, that would have been tough. And then again, as we said earlier, you sort of fall into this rut where that's what you become. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're a team that can't win. And then you become the Braves or the A's or Dombrowski's Tigers. And you're always there, but you never win. And it just sort of feeds off itself. And, you know, I think the Red Sox were in danger of becoming that. I'm still not sure they're totally out of the woods, by the way. Because
they're definitely not.
You know, from that thing, if they fail here, it won't be as dramatic. If they lost to the New York in the first round, like, look out, what a brutal offseason that would be for them. Now, at least, if they play well but lose to the defending champion, that's a hell of a team, you know, you can mitigate that a little bit.
Well, Dombrowski's Tigers teams, they won series, but, you know, the bullpen did end up catching up with them.
Sure.
I wouldn't lump them in just yet.
No, right, exactly. So I'm not the
with Sox. This arson squad they got there.
Sox are not out of the woods. They're not out of the woods, but it's not as bad as it could be. And if they had lost to New York after that regular season, ay vey. And so, I mean, by the way Dombrowski's managed this team, they have to win a championship because he's sold.
Agreed.
He's sold on the long haul. He's sold on the future. He's sold on the slow build. And so he's loaded you up with these older stars that are going to have to get paid or they're going to be gone. And so you have a short window. So you got to hit. You got to hit.
I mean, it was a small window. You know, think of it this way. Sale signed for one more year. I mean, and now with this shoulder thing popping up, I don't know. You start rethinking how much you want to invest there. Like, and that's a different question for another day. But the window's not big.
Okay, we continue with your reaction. Chuck in the car. What do you got?
Hey, love the show. But you guys are driving me nuts. I got three quick things. On Cora, this guy's got a team of people behind him, obviously, but he, in the end, has to make all the decisions. So he gets 100% of the credit. So your take is weak. Two, the whole thing with the gutless bums that whole shtick has to be put on a shelf. It's over.
No, it's not.
I kind of like
it. Yeah, it is.
Not what, because of that one game?
My third point is Price. Price is going to be great in game two. I've been watching these guys all season.
Oh, God.
I know his playoff record is terrible, but Corey's showing confidence in him, and it's going to pay off. That's all I got.
Okay. Very good, Chuck. So there's
rainbows and puppy dogs, Chuck, in the car. Okay.
Well, you know what? I mean, he actually might have had an argument until he got to Price. Like, then the wheel of gutless bums is going nowhere. I love that.
Can thing. I dedicate this to Chuck?
Matt Bonds, Heath Henry, Joe Kelly, and those other guys.
It's time to spin the wheel of gutless bums. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
And today's gutless bum is the jackpot of size.
Yes. The biggest surprise last night was Barnes and Brazier. 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Great job by them, taking nothing away from them. But if the bullpen reverts in this series and they lose in the ALCS, I mean, what do you
think we're going to do?
And what do you think is the right thing to do? The right thing to do is hit the bullpen caught up with them.
No question about it. I mean, to me, there's no way around that. There's a vulnerability there. If they weren't, they wouldn't be pitching Sale and Porcello in the eighth inning.
But which is fine. I mean, if they pitch like they did in New York, they're going to win it all. If they get good starting pitching like they did, and they can get clean sheetings from Barnes and Brazier in those kind of situations, and then throw in the occasional starter in the eighth, if they can do that, then they're in. Let's just see them do it one more round here before you do that. And 100% of the credit to the manager, I'm sorry, that's not the way baseball works anymore. Unless you're like, I don't know, maybe there's some old school operations like Socha,
right.
Or someone like this, you know.
And even then, 100's too much. That's not realistic.
These are all organizational decisions now. And so I don't know why'd you get sensitive about that. There's someone in there with the Red Sox who's making the right call. Or it's a combination of them putting their heads together or whatever. I just don't think it's all the manager saying this guy, that guy, this guy, that guy. I think he gets the three ring binders. I think they all sit around and they all come up with these decisions based on matchups and numbers and analytics and some of the manager's intuition. That's all. No reason to get sensitive over that one. Jeff in Rhode Island. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the call. My first point was going to be that Kimbrel was going to drink that beer that got thrown at him, but I think Chuck was the one that threw it at him last night. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, be it as it may. My second point, you know, you guys are sleeping on Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly, to me, went 2 1/3 against the Yankees, shutout inning, and only gave up one hit. I think Joe Kelly, guys, is the pitcher, eighth inning guy needer.
Okay, all right, I'm just going to cut you off there. What was the score when Joe Kelly came into that ballgame?
Again, so I was just going to say
3-0, I think.
Yeah, they were behind. It was
pressure.
No, an emergency type of situation. He's either a hero or it's really not on him at all. So, I think Cora's telling you, the caller can say Joe Kelly all you want. Cora's telling you there were two guys in that bullpen that he'll go to when he trusts. Barnes and Brazier. He showed you that last night. Nobody else got in the game.
And he also, in game one, those were the guys. They failed. But those were the primary guys there, right?
Correct.
So, I mean, those are the two.
Kelly was only there last night as a last resort for Kimbrel. They only got him up when the thing was on fire already.
Those other two were terrific. And if they can keep that going, you are in business. Jeff in the car. Hi, Jeff.
So, you guys, about a half hour ago, you made the comment that, Porcello would look like he was losing it in this fifth inning. And I'm just basically calling to say that I think that's completely ridiculous to say that he was losing. I can't believe they pulled him out of that game after five innings when you consider their bullpen the way it's been.
So I didn't say he was losing it. I felt he was done. I felt he had one more at bat, and it was Hicks.
Why do you think, I mean, he here's a guy who comes out, he gets the first out in the inning, the next guy gets a serious double, no question, gets that BS grounder down the third base line, which was ridiculous that even ended up happening. That should have been an out, and if it was an out, then Brett Gardner's deep fly ball doesn't even score the guy.
Okay, but
he's probably not on third anyway, so, and then the next guy flew out too, and that was, it was over.
So you disagree with Cora taking him out to start the sixth?
Absolutely. Considering what the bullpen has been doing, I disagree. Now, in hindsight, it looks like the right move, but I'm just saying at the time, guy was at like 64 pitches.
65.
He was having great success against He was having great success against the top of the order, and that was what was going to come up in the sixth inning. You know, I don't know.
Let me stop. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask him a quick question, which is, would he have felt better if Porcello had gone six? The reason I would have said that is Cora looked at it as six innings because he had Sale for the eighth. Cora in his head obviously knew he was going to go to Sale in the eighth. So that's why he pulled Porcello.
The caller's also missing it. If he just stopped talking for a second, I could have told him. I believe this was the inning where both Gardner and then Hicks hit screamers right down the line that were almost home runs.
Foul.
Both of them. I think back to back. I think. I know Gardner did it once.
You're right, Mike.
And Hicks did it once.
No, that's right.
And if they went back to back, it was that inning. It was the fifth. So you go into it up 4-0. You gave up a screamer of a double to Sanchez. It was a ground rule double. And then both Gardner and Hicks just both barely missed home runs right down the line. And Barnes was up and warmed and ready to go. So the caller can disagree with Cora, but I felt Porcello was done. So did Cora, the master tactician. So I'm closer to, you know, what actually happened there than you were. But I don't know if it was only 65 pitches, huh?
Yeah, it was. He pulled him at 65.
I didn't realize
Cora
that.
Porcello had 40 through four. 40. I mean, he was cruising, man. He was absolutely cruising. Again, the Yankees helping him out, fast outs, the whole nine yards. It was like that game in Boston here in some ways. The other thing, and to me, I'm sorry, it's a big factor. Cora looked at it and said, I got the eighth and ninth locked up. I got, in his mind, he had Sale and Kimbrel there, so he only needed two innings out of the bullpen.
But let me give you one more. The lineup was about to flip for the third time. So
yeah, it's a huge part of it.
So that was, you know, Hicks was the top of the order, and he got him, you know, that was the third time for him. But Judge, all those guys would just come up for the third time as well. No, Porcello was done. That was it.
And that might be your analytics at work, right?
Yeah, third time through. Thing.
Absolutely.
We continue with your calls and your thoughts here on Felger and Maserati.
Felger and Maz. The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Runner at first, two outs. Pitch number 23 of the inning for Porcello. Pitch number 9 of the at-bat. Torres will take off. There he goes. And a swing and a high fly ball back out in the grass. Kinsler, he wants it. He's got it. And the Red Sox able to get through the fifth. Only one run is in.
And that's how Porcello got out of that inning, just picking up that conversation. The fifth, I think that was one of the most important at-bats of the game. Maybe third most important. Obviously, the final out of the game is the most important. Like, that was, obviously, those outs at the very end of the ninth were the most important, including the Stanton strikeout with the freaking bases loaded. And, well, I guess it was first and second. First and second, nobody out. Kimbrel can't hit he can't throw it in the ocean. And Stanton, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, once again, completely overmatched by a pitcher who's not pitching well in Kimbrel. But anyway, that Stanton strikeout in the ninth was huge. But that Hicks at bat, again, because of that situation, I think Porcello was teetering. He was at the end. He was about to flip the lineup for the third time. You know how baseball managers feel about that. He had started to get hit. He gave up a ground rule double to Sanchez. He allowed a run on a sac fly. Garner almost hit a home run down the left field line. Hicks almost hit a homer down the right field line. So what you have there is a runner on, Hicks up. It's now a 4-1 game, and Judge is standing in the on-deck circle, and Barnes is warmed. And I felt that if Porcello lost Hicks there, that Cora was going to be aggressive and bring in Barnes.
I agree.
And
I think that was it for him. That was his last guy, no matter what.
So the fact that they were able to bring Barnes into a clean inning the next half inning was huge. That situation, again, you talked about it in the post game on NBC Sports Boston. It's so true, especially in New York. Just seeing the atmosphere. If Porcello had lost Hicks, and now you've got two runners on, and Judge is standing there in the on-deck circle for the full 2.5 minutes for, again, that zoo down there to get up, and now Barnes has to walk in from the bullpen. Like, that's a whole different situation than starting clean the next half inning.
Yeah, no question. And not to mention the impact it could add on the game. Let's say, you know, Hicks hits one into the gap or something. Now you're 4-2. Like, you know, the Yankees were starting to show a pulse there. They get a run. They're back, you know, starting to creep back into the game a little bit. And that was a huge out. Huge. And then just as big was the fact that they ripped off another 8-9 in a row. really, when you know, between Barnes and Brazier, and you know, then all of a sudden the Yankees got no momentum again until the ninth.
So I thought that was the biggest at bat of the game, just about till he got to the very end. That Stanton at bat. Talk about Giancarlo Stanton. Do people not? Does he not? I find it so insane that if you throw him a slider that starts at his knees, he buckles like he's never seen the thing before, like he's jello. And if you throw him any sort of slider off the plate, he swings no matter how far off the plate it is. Like, it seems like he lays off the high fastball at least some, but he never lays off that slider off the right, you know, from a right-hander off the outside part of the plate. It's just pathetic. The discipline for him at the plate, it's horrible.
Yeah, brutal. And he tries to, you know, jerk and yank everything and jack it. So, again, if you put the ball on the outside part of the plate, he's trying to hit it out of the ballpark. A good hitter there, we all know what he does, is either shoots the ball the other way or drives it the other way, whatever, either way. This guy, everything, if the pitch isn't middle in, he can't hit it. He really can't hit it. I mean, it's like he's really, all you got to do is stay away and you're okay.
I'm just, the swings and the misses at balls a foot out of the plate are, to me, just mind-blowing. And so you got Kimbrel, who was a puddle last night. I'm sorry. He was just, Kimbrel was a mess. But against Stanton, it was like strike looking, strike swinging, a set-up high fastball that was obviously just to set him up and then slider away. 1-2, you know, bing, bang, boom, just like he did in game one. And it's like, That's how overmatched Stanton is in that situation, that it actually calmed Craig Kimbrel down for a minute.
Yeah, that's right. Although, you know, even in that at bat, if I remember right, Stanton swung at balls out of the zone. I think the second strike was down.
He was actually the more panicked of the two in that situation.
No, right, so it's a good way to put it, Murray.
I think his strike two and three, the swinging strikes, are both balls. They're both well out of the zone. So, Giancarlo Stanton in those big spots.
How many guys did he leave on base in this series? How do we find that out? That had to be a ton. Holy crap, that had to be a ton.
So, big spot there for him. Those were two key at-bats. We continue with your reaction to last night. We've got Frank in Worcester. Go ahead, Frank.
So, good. Two quick points. I agree with you. I don't know who's making the calls for Alex Cora before pregame, but I have to give him a lot of credit for in-game calls. He was light years ahead of the Yankees between the steals, the hit and runs. And I was screaming at the TV, first and second, no outs. I think this was last night's game. And Sandy Leon, talk about who can't hit a curveball. Finally, they bunt and get the runners over. And I think he actually got an infield single on that. My second point real quick.
I'm going to stop you there. What are you talking about?
I have no idea.
Did San Leon get an at-bat?
No.
Did he play?
No, I don't.
So what are you talking about?
I don't know what the hell he's talking. I have no idea.
Okay, the running game, they sort of activated it there in game three in New York. It was a big part of their game.
No question. And again, it's not all about the steals. It's about the first to thirds and putting pressure on the defense. You know, they did it with Betts in the third game. They did it with Benintendi in the fourth game. 5 for 5 on steal attempts, if you want to throw that in there. Meanwhile, the Yankees, Zippo on the bases. Zippo. Was there anything the Yankees did on the bases that made you go, ooh?
Is there anything they do other than hit home runs?
No. And that's the problem with that team, is that there aren't enough guys who hit for average. You know, all they do is play for home runs, which gets back to that whole line from Cora at the beginning of the series. Keep the ball in the ballpark. If we keep the ball in the ballpark, we'll be okay.
More on Giancarlo Stanton from John and Stoughton. Go ahead, John.
Hey, for a second, I didn't know where Kimbrel was getting his heart from. He looked like Tuca real quick out there. I thought he was just going to puke in his spot. But Stanton real quick. Tony. While you were sitting in the Jim Burgoyne Memorial Green Room, was there a small part of you knowing that you were screaming for Stanton in the beginning of the season, sort of wishing you he was going to come up in a big spot?
John, believe it or not, I mean, I wasn't rooting for Stanton last night, if that's what you're asking me. And so, but look, the guy's an easy out if you pitch him right. I mean, so I wanted, you know, I was interested in seeing him come up in a big spot to see if he could deliver.
I mean, what a litmus test.
But believe it or not, not for any self-serving take benefit.
But, I mean, talk about just all right there. I mean, again, people treat him here like he was some sort of disaster in New York. He had 38 home runs and 100 RBI, and their team won 100 games. So it's like, I think people overplay a little bit the failure of the signing. Like, that ain't Carl Crawford, as I said earlier. That's not Adrian Gonzalez territory. That's a guy that went there in 38 and 100, and they won 100 games, and he was right in the middle of it all season. So it was hardly a disaster. But, however, you make that kind of move, pay him that kind of money, and he comes up in those situations in this series, and he looks the way that he looks.
Yeah, I mean, futile.
Oh, God.
I mean, that was the definition of futility. There was no chance of him making contact there. None.
The crap that he swings at. Have you never seen a slider before, dude? Have you ever no one throws you sliders to the point where you can't figure it out? It's so obvious what Kimbrel was doing. Everybody else, Kimbrel was fastball. He's yanking it all over the place. Then he sees Stanton, and whatever it is, knuckle, curve, slider, whatever that thing is, that he's throwing. It's so obvious how he sees going soft to Stanton. He's throwing soft. He's throwing off speed. He's throwing the pitches with movement. How come Stanton couldn't figure that out?
So, again, because he'd be probably a dumb hitter.
Stand in there. The thing that starts over your knee is going to come over the plate.
Correct.
He couldn't figure it out.
No. He's just again, the more you watch him, and I admit, I didn't know all this about him until I started seeing more of him. He's a hacker. He just goes up there and hacks. That's it. That guy's not a hitter. He's a hacker.
But when he does contact,
oh, my God, scary.
Laser beams.
Oh, it is. It's like one irons. The ball's just absolute rockets all over the place.
But just throw him a little slider outside. You're fine. Tony and Stoneham, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Just a touch base on the Stan thing. I wasn't going to talk about him. Ted Williams said the hardest pitch to hit in baseball is a slider. And if you look at Betts, look at Bogaerts, look at JD, they all look bad on those pitches, but they are better hitters.
No. Well, the key is to lay off them. The key is not to swing, you know, unless...
No, I know that's the key, but our players don't either. Now, I got to tell you, Cora got awful lucky last night, and I think he made the move too fast. He got Porcello, 65 pitches, two hits. He pitched a one-hitter against him, 85 or 90 pitch, complete game, and you take him out for Bonds.
Wow.
And the other guy, yes, it worked last night. I agree with you, it worked last night. But then now you put Sale in the eighth inning, and what if you needed a play tomorrow? And Sale had to throw 20 or 25 pitches. Who are you going to start?
No, but that's not anyone's fault other than Craig Kimbrel. Like, that, it worked perfectly. It was a 4-1 lead. You should be able to moonwalk backwards to that win last night.
See, the caller sees it as, well, then you had to go to Sale. And they got it backwards. Cora knew he was going to Sale, so he said all I got to do is get 5 out of Porcello.
I'm surprised as many people think that Porcello should have stayed in his due.
Yeah, he was starting to teeter. There's no question about it.
And they were going to be aggressive. Like, that's what we've learned in these games. The managers that wait an extra at-bat usually get burned.
I mean, now had the bull, like, the fact that it worked should validate Cora, because Barnes pitched well. Brazier pitched well. If those guys hadn't pitched well, then I'd be the first one here saying, boy, you probably should have gotten Porcello out there.
I just think people also forgetting about those near home runs. Like, Porcello was starting to get hit. They were on him. It was coming to the third time through the lineup, and they were on him. They were on him that inning. He was fortunate to get out of it. I mean, he pitched his way out of it. I'm not saying it was like luck or something, but he was done. That was it. I thought so anyway.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
I do need to say this, though. I don't think Angel Hernandez should be umping playoff games. He's absolutely terrible. He's terrible behind the plate today. He's terrible at first base. It's amazing that how he's getting a job to pitch and to play in these, to umpire in these playoff games.
What did you say to him in the first inning?
Yeah. It's just a conversation for us, but he shouldn't be anywhere near a playoff game.
Is that sentiment shared by many of your teammates?
Everybody, I think.
Everybody.
I think if you go ask them on the other side, too.
Was this strike zone tonight?
It's always.
Yeah.
It's always. He's bad. I don't understand why he's doing these games.
So I thought this was pathetic, embarrassing. CC Sabathia on Angel Hernandez. So we spent a lot of time on Angel Hernandez yesterday because he had such a brutal day at first base in game three. And he's such a bad umpire and such a lightning rod guy. And we spent a lot of time on him. A lot of people spent a lot of time on him. He was also behind the plate last night. So it's like, what's he going to do to screw this one up? And so it was a big pregame talker yesterday. Angel Hernandez. At the end of the day, do you think Angel Hernandez was a factor in that ballgame last night?
No.
0.00. No. Zero.
And in fact, I would say he was refreshingly unnoticeable for the most part.
He was just generically bad.
Correct.
He was just he was,
if he didn't know the name, you wouldn't be like you wouldn't have made a point.
No, he wasn't any worse than any other umpire in any game.
Generically bad. If you had watched that game and it was Joe Blow, you would say little inconsistent. I'm not exactly sure what a strike is there, but I say that every night. So, you know, it's just another mediocre night behind the dish in Major League Baseball. He was not a beyond the pale in any way, shape, or form. Sabathia, I think, has nothing left. Zero. He first of all, the fat load can't move.
Oh, he's a whale.
Just when he came off the mound for that one little tapper, that was embarrassing.
His gut is hanging out over his belt. Okay. He's a whale.
So he is
between him and Lance Lynn, man. They breed beef on that staff.
Oh yeah, no, there's your short yardage right there. That's a heavy set.
So he is out of shape, one, but more importantly, at 38, he's just cashed. Okay, so he can't throw hard enough anymore. He can't challenge hitters. So he's just sort of dependent on, it feels like to me, just watching last night, throwing on the corners and hoping to get some calls.
Exactly.
And so Angel Hernandez didn't really give him any. Gave him some, but not all of them. Because, again, he's just had a generically bad night behind the plate like everybody does in that league, it feels like. Nothing special, nothing out of the ordinary. But Sabathia knows he's dealing with a slow-moving target. He knows that people are on to Angel Hernandez. He knows Hernandez's reputation, and it's an easy out for him. Blame that guy, because everyone knows that he sucks. And so, what a cop-out, you fat load. Why don't you retire? I mean, if you're going to look like that and put that little into your physical condition, then, you know what, dude, just go away. But don't have a mediocre night at the plate where, I'm sorry, the Sox should have scored 7 off this guy. But he blames him because he knows people will buy in, especially those that didn't watch. Like, if you didn't watch, you say, yeah, of course Hernandez sucked. He cost him because Hernandez sucks. If you watched, he wasn't that bad. It was fine.
I don't think there was anything egregious.
No.
There was one call that bugged me, which I'll get to in a minute, but go ahead.
Yeah, and it was against the Red Sox,
correct,
right?
Yep.
Yeah. It was the low pitch to Benintendi that he complained about after the 8th.
In the 8th, I thought that, remember yesterday I was saying he strikes me as the kind of guy that in the middle of a good play will get caught up in it and call the guy out at first if the play at second involves something special. Last night in that 8th inning, Betances was sort of rolling, the crowd was getting into it. He threw that ball to Benintendi and he struck him out.
But Angel Hernandez was a non-factor in this ballgame last night. Non-factor, 0.0. But Sabathia knows people around him, so easy scapegoat. What a chicken bleep move by Sabathia. And I'd have more respect for you I don't know if you were in shape, but you just pitched a good game and you did get squeezed, but you didn't. You don't have anything left. So I thought that was just lowbrow. I hated that.
Did you hear or see what Porcello said after the game about it?
Yes, it was great.
We did, in fact. Jimmy?
Baseball is happy with the strike zone. He said as much after the game. What were your thoughts of facing the same zone?
He threw the ball over the plate, CC. I thought Angel Hernandez called a good game. You got to put the ball over the white part of the plate, and then you get the strikes called. So that's all I got to say about that.
Okay, the sound there on that one was bad, but he said, throw the ball over the plate, CeCe.
Oh, I love that answer. You see that white thing? That's called a plate.
You got to put the ball over the white part of the plate.
So he said, Angel Hernandez called a good ball, because Sabathia in his comments said, go to the other side. I'm sure they're saying the same thing.
Right. Correct.
So they asked the other side.
Smart move.
And Porcello, said, by the media guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But Porcello says, no, he pitched a good game. You see that white thing? You got to throw it over there. And maybe what he meant was that, CeCe, you're 89 mile an hour nibbling fat toad. Okay, so it's not the umpire's fault that you're throwing it outside the plate and praying for strike calls. That's not the umpire's fault. Throw strikes.
No, absolutely right. I mean, again, it's called the plate, not the kind you eat off, chubby. You know, no fork and knife on this one.
I'm sorry, man. Like,
the stupid Yankees are probably going to bring him back, too. He's a free agent this winter. He said he wants to play. So they just signed him on a one-year deal this year.
He is gigantic. He's gigantic.
I hope that they do.
You remember remember the McDonald's character, Grimace?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
That's him.
Grimmy.
Yeah. He's fat. He's huge.
El Grimacio.
Oh, my God. His belly was hanging out over his belt. What a slob. That's as fat as I've ever seen a major league pitcher in my life. What a whale.
Not the umpire's fault, CeCe. Not the umpire's. Not last night. And he knows, too. He even mentioned first base. He's horrible at first base because he knows everyone's on him. And so it's an easy scapegoat for CeCe Sabathia when you didn't pitch well. and I'm not sure what you have left. And you've certainly let yourself go. So I had bad form there to blame the umpire. That's just my thoughts on that.
What a cow.
Long commercial-free segment is next. Guess who's hot? Who's the hottest member of the Red Sox right now?
AC.
That would be the manager. We'll discuss this next in our long commercial-free segment.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He's still a tough matchup, but the way Brock was swinging the bat, we do feel that he can put good at-bats against him.
That ball's ripped down the right field line. That is a fair ball home run, and the cycle for Brock Holt.
Stuff-wise, one of the best pitchers in big leagues. Velocity, movement with the cutter, he has that split. Been throwing the ball well against them.
There's a called strike three as Eovaldi hits 100 here in the seventh inning. There's a swing and a miss for back-to-back strikeouts for Eovaldi.
Like yesterday, we felt that that was the best lineup for us to attack Severino, and tonight we feel this is the best lineup to attack CeCe Sabathia. We got a group of righties that we feel that we can match up with him and take advantage of the situation.
Now another base hit for Boston. Could certainly tighten the screws on Aaron Boone. That one's hit hard left field. Gardner can't make the play. Bounces off the wall. Pierce scores. Kinsler into second base with an RBI double. And now another base hit. Nunez into left field. Kinsler's going to turn and head home. It's going to be 3-0 Red Sox. Eduardo Nunez with a two-out RBI single. Fly ball right field. Vasquez sending Judge back. Got some carry. And this ball's going to bounce out. It's a home run for Vasquez.
We returned a lot of guys. And, you know, he didn't come in and try and change everything. He let us he just let us be free. I think he's done a great job in doing that.
I'm going to give an enormous amount of credit to Alex, and it seemed like every move he made in this series worked out. Holt playing yesterday and Kinsler playing today. Kinsler had a big key hit. He managed the pitching very well. Had Sale come in the eighth inning, which was very exciting. So he gets an enormous amount of credit.
Member of the Red Sox, Alex Cora, Maz, your thoughts?
Absolutely. Look, again, you just don't often see it as stark and as obvious as it was the last two nights. He made a lineup change after game two and got immediate results. He made another series of lineup changes after game three and got immediate results. And the one that really sticks out above all others was Vasquez last night. Because in the other ones, you could just say, well, that's simple left-right, no problem, whatever. A lot of managers would do that, and that's true. They would. But the Vasquez one, that was the first time he caught Porcello all year. Like, that one didn't add up, right? Like, you look at it and go, why would you do that now? Like, why would you get to this stage and then all of a sudden change catchers? Like, that's the night you elect to do it. And Leon also hits left-handed pitching typically, even though lately he hasn't hit anything from any side. But even so, he puts Vasquez in there, and Vasquez ends up hitting a home run. They catch you the game-winning run in a clinching game of a series. So I just think he's hot. That's all. He's hot. I don't think it's anything revolutionary, like, from that standpoint. But everything he's touching right now is turning to gold. At some point, that's going to dry up on him. But he is. He's red hot right now.
So my only point earlier, and I'll just reset it, is that I think they're groupthink decisions. Or I wonder. Because a lot of them are between games decisions. And we talk about, and baseball has had this big trend of, it really comes from the front office and the analytics department, and these young managers, especially these young inexperienced managers, are really now just babysitters for the personalities in the clubhouses. And what they really do is just take the three-ring binders and the recommendations that come from upstairs and implement those and make sure everyone's happy. And that's sort of what we give these, you know, modern-day managers credit for. So who's ever making the calls with the Red Sox, they're hot. But I'm not convinced that it's totally Alex Cora. And the more you look at them, they really just feel matchup-based. Simple matchup-based stuff. There's a righty, they go lefties, as you just said. There's a righty, they go... I'm sorry, they go lefty, they go righties up at the dish. If there's a righty, they go lefties up at the dish. Someone has a good personal number against a pitcher, you put him up in the lineup. Like, the tip-off was game one of the series when Steve Pierce was batting third. We all said, Steve Pierce batting third. Then you looked at his numbers against J.A. Happ, and he had great numbers against J.A. Happ. And Alex Cora, before that game, even said, I guess I got to play this guy, huh? Or else I'm going to get fired. Remember that comment?
Of course.
So we all read it at the time and said, oh, he's being told to play Steve Pierce. So if he's being told to play Steve Pierce, why can't he be told to also play Nunez over Devers or vice versa?
Oh, you could totally be. It's absolutely possible.
So that's what I think is going on. I don't mean to take anything away from Cora, but I guess that I am. Because I just find it's just not consistent that we say, well, these things come from upstairs and it's analytics and their group decisions and their organizational decisions. And then they make a string of good decisions. We go, boy, Cora's hot. Well, maybe it's some nerd. Maybe it's some nerd with a pocket protector.
I mean, it could be. I just, you know, to me, it feels to me, though, like he's got a pretty good feel for his team. And so, and when I say feel for his team, competitively, too. Like, he knows when guys, what the right matchups are for what guys.
Well, I mean, they're really going with the matchups. And, you know, you raise an interesting one. You know, just going with the righties last night against Sabathia. Because he's so, Brock Holt hits for a cycle. And he's benched the next night simply because he wants a right-handed bat versus a left-handed pitcher. He's going with the matchups. But you said individually that they don't have good numbers against Sabathia.
The night before against Severino. Yeah, that Holt against Severino is 1 for 15. And that the Devers was 0 for 12. So those guys combined are 1 for 27, but they put more stock in
Severino's left-right numbers.
Exactly. They weighted it that way. And that's all I'm saying is that eventually there's some decision you have to make. And so, whatever it is, he's hot right now. Okay, he's hot. He's red hot.
But I just think I don't think he's playing hunches. I don't think they are playing hunches.
No, no, they're not.
They're going off of some number or another, whether it's a left-right split or a player's individual track record. They're going off of matchups and numbers and track record. It's not like he's just
flying by the seat of his pants.
Right, or just playing a hunch, or this is Joe Morgan or something. Like, this is just what I feel, and this is what we're going to do because I'm sensing this. No, I think it's all presented to him in a statistical, measure, and they pick up which stats are important, and they go based on those. And that's not any different than any other team nowadays. I think that's the way it's all done. And I think we're getting another good example of it now this week. If you're just going on past performance, I don't mean past performance, I mean recent performance. If you're going on recent performance and how guys look and how guys are throwing the ball, on no planet is David Price getting the ball before Nathan Eovaldi.
Correct.
But David Price has had good splits against Houston this year. He threw two good games against Houston. He's got data against Houston this year in his favor. Eovaldi had a bad outing against Houston. So I don't think Cora's playing a hunch here. I don't think the Sox are playing a hunch. I think the Sox are saying, here's this set of data, here's that set of data, and we're going to go with the numbers that say this guy's a better bet against Houston.
Okay, my only point is this. There's still a decision to be made there.
Sure.
And when I say that, I mean, why aren't they looking at the October numbers? Why do the matchup numbers mean more to them than the October numbers? Price has, pitched now 10 times in October and still doesn't have a win. And yet they're still willing to go back to him. Why?
Why?
So I think there's a variable there of the matchup's part of it. I'm not disputing that. But I also think they look at it and say, we got to try to get this guy going. If we're going to win the whole thing, we'll take a shot, and we'll take a shot at home versus on the road. And so it's early in the series. We'll see what it looks like. It's game two, so there's still five games potentially after it, and we'll take a look and see what it looks like.
And if you're just joining us, folks, Alex Cora announced today that David Price gets the ball in game two.
Correct.
Game two.
Which I wouldn't do.
Nor would I. You want him going where?
I'd go game four. To me, that's the one. And for this simple reason, you look at the way you guys are throwing the ball right now, and in that first round against the Yankees, you got three pretty good starts. You got a good one out of Sale, you got a great one out of Valdi, and you got a good one out of Porcello. Price is the outlier.
And yet he's going game two.
So I look at it simply. You got three guys that were good and one guy that was bad. The guy who was bad should pitch the least in the next round.
Pretty simple.
I mean, to me, that's how I think of it. They're going this direction. Now, again, with the way Cora's going, Price will probably come out and throw seven innings and then win the game 8-2. Like, I don't know. The number that stuck out to me with Price against Houston this year was 159. That was the batting average against. I mean, that's low for that team, especially 159. So now the ERA you look at and you say, well, it's 365. And I don't know if you remember down there earlier in the year when the Red Sox lost the first two games of that series, they played the Saturday night game and Price fell behind. And in the middle innings, that game could have gotten away. And he actually kind of grinded his way through it and kept him close. And they came back and won, and they got out of there with a split. And then up here against him, he pitched much better, although they then went to the bullpen in the seventh inning, and the bullpen blew the game. So he didn't get a win for it. So the game up here is better than the one down there, but he did fight a little in Houston, which with him is always an issue.
So, but the point here on Price is that he's ignoring, they are ignoring or diminishing the fact that he just sucks in the playoffs. He sucks. They are ignoring the look in his eye, the fact he needs an oxygen mask out on the mound, and that there's a bacon strip in his underwear, and going with,
well, he looked good this year against Houston. He's got good splits of 159 batting average against.
They're going with the harder data.
Yeah.
The less sort of feel thing.
And my only thing is, how much of that is core and how much of it is that the front office? Because, again, you hear over and over again, baseball, more the front office guys have influence on the lineup decisions.
No, it's a fair point.
So, but this one really puts it to a test.
Yeah, you mentioned the look in his eye, and I think you mean when he's pitching. Did you look at the photo I sent you guys in the email?
Oh, no, I didn't. What?
It's the group photo of them, you know, post-celebration, all taking like a photo like, hey, we, you know, beat the Yankees here in their own turf. Everyone's smiling. Hey, we finally won this playoff series with this crew. One guy's not smiling. Who do you think it was? In the back.
Pricey.
Do we have a picture of it for the simulcast? I'm sorry, I forgot to open it up. I'll pull it up
when you know, during the next commercial break. But it's worth seeing because, again, everyone just, yeah, in the back.
They did it without me. No one needs old David.
Game two.
Yeah, game two started. That's great.
Game two at Fenway.
And six. In theory.
Ugh. Don't forget game six. Good one, Mass. All right, so we continue with your thoughts, your reaction to last night, looking ahead, whatever you want. Your calls right after Murray's update here.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Mass.